Well, first of all, these are not birth histories. They're not strictly birth histories. They are life histories as well. They include migration history and family history and birth history. And this is not the first time that this kind of interview has been done in America. Mine had a particular focus because they were all based on one community, and I was interested in the interrelationship between the people, not just in the individual story. I was trying to see how the different individual histories fit together into one pattern of work and family and community. And so originally, interviewing people who worked in the common setting of the same factory was crucial for that project. Now for the new book, I am interviewing the children of these people. And they have not all worked in the same place. So that there is a much greater divergence both in the work experience and in the life history. I try to persuade these people that their life was important, that I was not interested in great and famous people, but I was interested in individual lives and that their own experience was valuable. But what was most persuasive to them was the fact that we recognized the importance of the place they worked in and the importance of their work as historically valuable, and that gave them a sense of pride and a sense of purpose, because for many years the textile industry was considered as a dying industry and these people were really just experiencing the shadow and the ruins of their lives. And so this was for them a new experience, to have someone come from the outside of the community and to recognize the Amerskegg mills and the textile experience as being important, and to recognize their lives as being important. And what was also crucial was that my husband, Randolph Langenbach, had put up an exhibit of the architecture of the mills, and that provided a direct identification and the sense of the importance, the historical importance of the place. And it was through the sense of place that we were able to get them to be more ready to talk about their histories. But the question about work was always crucial, that it was easier to get these people to talk about their work than first, than about their lives, and it's only through the work that we were then able to get into the life itself. Well, you can never be sure that you can completely generalize from individual histories. But I interviewed about 400 people, and they were from different ethnic groups, and they had worked in the mill at different points in its history, and they had worked in different occupations. And so that I was able to get some spread, even though it was not a random sample, of a variety of experiences. And what was important is that even though the memory was not always accurate, and even though there were contradictions in the accounts or in the perceptions or the interpretation of specific events like described, nevertheless, a common pattern did emerge from the interviews, and there was certainly a convergence in the narratives about the working conditions and the paternalism and the role of the family and the labor relations and the work process itself. So that even though the stories were individual, there was a common ground, and there was a certain consensus about this. Now, clearly, I did not interview the people who had left the community. So maybe if I had interviewed those who left and never came back, I might have gotten a different picture. So in generalizing, one has to keep in mind on whose basis one is generalizing, and I'm based generalizing on the basis of people who are alive, willing to talk, able to talk, and who had maintained a stronger identification with the community and with the factory. It is possible that if I had gotten people who had left, I would have gotten somewhat of a different story. But that's not entirely true either, because I followed people in other towns, and again, the story was very similar. Now, I went beyond the interviews for my generalization, because I reconstructed the individual career histories from the company's employment files. They had a file on each worker, so that I was able to look at recorded patterns and to compare those across. And also, in the new book, In Family Time and Industrial Time, I analyzed an actual sample of the records for their career patterns and their family patterns. And I was then able to compare the careers of the individuals in the interviews with those other patterns. Still, what one should not fool oneself, because what the interview provides that is unique is the individual perception. And that's the price one pays. If one cannot have an absolute generalization, if one takes individual perception, but on the other hand, if the individual perception that provides that kind of insight into what might have been the more general patterns, so that's the trade-off. And I did that with the full awareness that that was going to be my trade-off. The whole process is an individual intervention. An interview is not an objective document. An interview does not exist. An interview is an invention, and it's a result of an interaction between the interviewer and the interviewee, so that it is a creation of reality. And that creation depends very much on the interest of the interviewer, of the way in which the interviewer phrases the questions, and on the way in which the interviewer interacts with the interviewee. So the process is a construction right from the beginning, and one does it with that limitation in mind. So the translation itself was done as closely as possible to the spirit, not just the language, but the spirit. For example, we retained in the text phrases such as, "They used me well," which j'étais bien utilisé, and it means, in proper English, it would mean they treated me well, but they used me well. Or when they said we had to earn our daily bread, we left in English the word "our daily bread" rather than "we had to earn our living." So that we try to be as close as possible to those phrases. And nevertheless, it is a construction. Now, as far as the selection as to what goes into the book, this book did not intend to be a representative collection of a random sample of interviews about textile work. It intended to provide a window into how people felt about this and how they experienced their work and their life and their migration. And therefore, the interviews that were selected for the book were the ones that were most articulate, that had the most cohesive stories, and that presented a message that went beyond the individual experience in a way that would be meaningful for the experience of other people. So those were very important criteria in the selection of the interviews. However, I very carefully try to select these type of interviews from certain categories. So if I had many interviews of the first generation, within those I selected among the many duplicates the ones that fit those criteria best. Among those who were the younger generation, the same thing. Among those who were French Canadian, who were Irish, who were Polish, in other words, or people who were in different occupations, I tried to retain some of these categories and then select within them the ones that were the most articulate and that best conveyed the people's own experience. But I did not select in any way interviews that conveyed my point of view, and I did not select interviews that would better prove a certain hypothesis than others. I tried to get to let the people speak for themselves, and my own hypotheses were not part of the criteria for the selection. The purpose of the book was both. It was to convey the life histories in a way that the historian, sociologist, anthropologist, or anyone would see how people responded to the industrial system, how they experienced it, how they adapted to change, how they used their families, and in what ways the family responded to these changes. It was also intended to be addressed to the general public, so that the general public would get an insight into that experience. And there were footnotes in the text wherever there was a contradiction or wherever there was a lack of clarity. And there was a historical introduction, and there was also an introduction on how this material was gathered and selected. But I deliberately did not impose my own theoretical interpretation, and because I knew this also, that I was writing Family Time and Industrial Time, and in that book I presented the theoretical interpretation and only used the interviews to quote and to support my evidence. But in this, in Amos' case, it was very important for me not to interfere with interpretation, except the underlying structure of the kind of questions I asked, and of the very fact that I went to interview those people had a theoretical and a scholarly purpose. And I think that the experience that's conveyed in the interviews can be used to address that theoretical purpose. Again, because I felt that what I wanted to do is to present the people's experiences and their own statements about it, rather than superimpose my interpretation in that book. And because I knew I was writing the other book, I felt that I would be addressing all these questions in the other book. And therefore, the introductory material that I did provide pertained not to an analysis of the people's responses, but rather to the historical background of the company itself and of the town, so that one would understand the context and the changes that affected their lives. So that what I really chose is to discuss in my introduction historical time and industrial time, but let the people present the personal time and family time. But in the other book, I have analyzed that as well.
Thank you.